Hey, this is Christina Jaramillo, president of Personal ABM and Stop the Sales Drop. I know how to help sales and marketing teams improve the sales experience with a more personal account-based approach that focuses on the human buyers within target accounts. In my episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show, hosted by my friend Jason Cutter, I will share how you can drive more sales cycles, sales conversations, and revenue wins with accounts that were previously unresponsive to your communications simply because they did not see your personal relevance.
Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show. Joining me today is Christina Jaramillo. Christina is the president of Personal ABM and partner at Stop the Sales Drop, where she helps sales and marketing teams improve the sales experience with a more personal account-based approach. And obviously, I don't know if she put that in there or wanted me to say sales experience. She knew she had me as soon as she mentioned that, because that was what the show was previously called. One story she shared was by improving sales experience across all conversation channels that she worked with, her and her team helped create a $2 million win with accounts that were unresponsive for 5+ years as prospects didn't see the relevant value. For me, this is not a world that I've generally played in. So this is going to be a fun conversation. She and I have actually talked before. I'm more of a short sales cycle, direct to consumer, sometimes B2B, but definitely not at this scale where ABM is key. So I'm looking forward to this. Christina, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Thank you for having me, Jason. I appreciate it.
So I said ABM in there. I don't know if I mentioned account-based marketing. I don't think I did. Just for people who might not be familiar with that, depending on where they're coming from, what is ABM? What does it mean? And while you're at it, feel free to riff for a while. Like, what are people doing right and doing wrong with ABM?
Account-based marketing, there's also account-based sales. I've heard people call it account-based everything. It's where you're actually targeting specific organizations that you want to work with. And I've seen what, let's go talk about the getting it wrong part. ABM I've seen has become account-based either brand awareness, account-based advertising, account-based lead generation. And it's just not as personal as I particularly like. And the space that we play in is with 6- and 7-figure deals. So we need the personal relevance to get these deals. These are long sales cycles. So you're not going to close $6 or $7 million deal in 30 days, 2 emails. So it has to be super targeted to who's in the buying committee and relevant to what's really important to them and what's important to them on a personal level, on the business level, and then in their department as well. So there's a lot of different factors that go into that.
And like you said, I mean, it's account-based whatever, right? And I think the same thing happens with sales and marketing. Yep. It's like it starts out with this very simple term that some people agree on, and then everyone wants to change it and morph it and become something. So either way, the intent behind it is that you're focused on an account, meaning a company, something where it's very specific. It's a named brand, right? And you're like, I want to have that company as a client if it's a good fit. And so efforts are focused very sniper. It's not shotgun. It's not a nuclear bomb, just trying to like cover everything and hit everybody. It's very specific, right?
Absolutely. It's dialing down who your ideal customer is, who you work well with, what kind of companies you've had success with so that you can speak to that in forms of stories, in forms of case studies, in forms of experience. So it's knowing who your ideal customer is and targeting them as specifically as possible with content, messaging, interactions that are really relevant to them and their organization.
And when you're talking about content created for them that's relevant to them, are you going as far as like, okay, let's say, just for example, I want Google to be a client, right? I want to sell Google something. And so I am making Google only content that's like branded for them and or talking to them directly, or is it companies like Google is my content?
Where we typically work is we place ourselves as marketing for sales conversations. So if let's say you are already in conversations with Google, you might not be calling them out in a particular article, but you're using the insights that you've gained from either speaking with someone in there or just knowing what's happening in the market and creating an article that speaks to them without naming them so that you don't have any kind of conflict of interest or don't step on toes by saying you're doing this wrong or you're doing this wrong and you need to fix it. So it's specific for the conversation. And when they read it, the intent is that they figure out that you're talking to them because you know their challenges, but you're not calling them out so that everyone knows about the challenge, if that makes sense.
And is it where you want them to read it and know that you're talking to them and about them specifically, where they're like, they must have a mole inside the company and listening to our conversations, like that creepy, like, wow, did they just hear what Bob said? Like, they must know what we're talking about. Or just like general, like, wow, they really get our industry and our situation.
Yeah, it's
creepy,
it's,
or not creepy. Like, where's the line?
No, you don't have to, you can't be creepy because then it's, then you're sharing like guarded secrets, or, you know, you're taking their conversation and like putting it out in the world, but
got it.
Using the insights in such a way that they can see themselves in the content, whether it's an article, whether it's a blog post, or whether it's just that, you know, you took the insights that maybe you saw at the director level. And then when you talk to someone up higher up in the chain, make sure you hit those insights as well. Not necessarily saying, you know, Bob told me XYZ, but I've heard that you guys are experiencing this kind of challenge. And this is an opportunity I see to address that issue.
Got it. And what's the starter information that you look for or need to start these kind of campaigns for your clients or for a company? Like, do you need those conversations that have already been started, or sometimes you're starting with nothing?
So we play in three different areas. Either there's accounts that they want to win that they know they're going after. There's accounts that are like, they're having issues retaining. So like they're up for a new contract, or they've heard conversations that they might be looking around, shopping around and going to other organizations. Or there's accounts that they want to expand. So if they're trying to, usually those kind of insights you can get from a retention or expansion conversation, but for new accounts, you have to make sure that you're addressing clients or companies, excuse me, that look like companies that you worked for. So if you have case studies, you have success stories that can speak to them as closely and as relevant as possible.
As you're talking about this specific ABM, and obviously generally bigger ticket, bigger sales prices, maybe longer sales cycles.
Yes.
I'm just thinking about how these are all applicable marketing relationship building strategies, no matter what you're selling.
Absolutely.
Right? Like stories and or case studies that when somebody reads it, they go, holy crap, that's me. And I need whatever you're offering. It could be a direct mail letter sent to a homeowner, like same strategies, just done at a different scale,
exactly.
Different players, right? So tell me about the sales experience, right? When we're talking about that word, which of course, you know, I love, when it comes to this ABM strategy, this marketing strategy, relationship building towards an event, right? At first it's, do they even qualify? Is it a good fit? And then once you're at that point, then it's towards some kind of transaction. All of that being done in the realm or some part using social media and or where we met and how we know each other, which is LinkedIn.
Yeah. So we've seen quite an explosion of everyone kind of jumping on the digital bandwagon. There was people that have been there for years, and then there were people that were kind of forced to it. So they went from sales meetings, in-person events or conferences or trade shows. So now they're just forced into these digital platforms. So it's gotten quite crowded. So it's really competitive, and it's just gotten amplified over this last year. And I think it's just going to continue to be that way. But what I've noticed is, in my findings and just kind of figuring out what's going on, the Harvard Business Review study said that C-suite executives, so these are like the key decision makers, the people that hold the purse strings, they spend about 2% of their time with vendors each week. So that's roughly an hour. And that means you're competing with other people. So you need to get to the value right away because that's a small window. But what I've seen is that a lot of sales and marketing people are wasting their engagement time sending out mass information or pushing their agenda, pushing their value prop, pushing out messaging that maybe it's important to you as a company or you as a salesperson, but it's not necessarily important to the C-suite or the decision makers. And what they're looking for is people that are going to help them think differently about a challenge that they're having, give them a new way to do things that maybe they didn't even think about. More importantly, how you're going to have a greater impact or how you can help them have a greater impact on different parts of their organization. So operations, customers, their P&L, their internal employees, they're looking for value. And that spray and pray approach that you were kind of talking about earlier is definitely not going to work. You need some insights, and you can't do that campaigned approach. You can't speak to people. You have to speak to them personally and as relevant as possible.
So where is that blend? Because I feel like there is a blend, but maybe I'm wrong, which is the content which could fall under branding, awareness, sharing your expertise and knowledge, just in a general kind of canvassing, having content out there, and the ABM specific voice of the customer type of messaging, either directly or just online. Like, where's that balance? What have you found is working in your experience? And then we'll talk about what's not working on LinkedIn these days.
Yeah, absolutely. The usual old messaging of talking about my product, my solution, my offering, why it's so great. You know, we're the top in our industry. We have X amount of customers. We've hit this many goals. We've gotten these many awards. It's important to have, but you shouldn't lead the conversation with that. That's kind of like a secondary thing, because I can guarantee that most people that you engage with in a sales conversation have already done their homework on you, whether it's looking at your profile, Googling your company, going to the website, looking up your name. They've done some homework on you, so they know all these other things. So just leading with your solution and product kind of makes it all about you instead of shifting the conversation to the buyer, because that's obviously at the end of the day who they're actually going to care about is what's going to make them do better at their job. So if you're leading with value that's addressed to the buyer, to your customer, to your client, that's what I've seen is working way better than typical traditional sales and marketing efforts.
You're speaking to my heart. Like, anybody who's listening to this and can't see the video, I'm just smiling like crazy, because I think that holds true in the marketing space, in the conversations. The classic sales mode is, I have the information, I have the knowledge, I have to justify how smart I am, how great we are, what we do in business, the logos we work with, and that's justifying it and building that trust instead of building the trust around seeing if I can solve your problem, what your problem is, and showing you that I actually care first. So I love it. And a lot of people think, okay, marketing is just going to tell them all these things and build up how great we are, and then we'll care once we get on conversations. But it's like, you may never get that far.
Yeah,
and I love what you said too, which is stop assuming people have no idea who you are when they talk to you, especially that first time, because they do. Like, everybody within arm's length, 24 hours a day, has all the history of the world, knowledge and information at their fingertips. So they're not going in blind, especially when you're coming business to business, big ticket, higher end transactions, procurements. I'm not just guessing and going to figure it out and wing it with whoever they're working with.
Absolutely not. Yeah. Just as a seller, you've done your homework. Be prepared that the people that you're meeting with have done their homework as well. And they're going to be just as prepared for that conversation, if not more so, because they know what their KPIs are and their time's valuable. So they're not going to waste their time. So they're going to be prepared.
So what kind of shift would need to happen or needs to happen, or what kind of advice would you give to what you're seeing that's not effective for what people are trying to do on social? And not a judgment against like what people are doing or not, but just like based on what you taking are their goals, like what could they shift?
Well, we all had experienced this in the end of first quarter, beginning of second quarter this year, when C-19 kind of hit, a lot of sales and marketing teams were either frozen in their tracks because they didn't know what to do, reassessing what their goals were. Leads might have dried up, pipelines might have frozen, budgets might have totally been cut off, selling conversations might have stalled or just kind of dropped off, and revenue either plateaued or kind of like took a little bit of a dip. So I think people were freaking out then. So that made sales and marketing teams, they figure out like in third quarter, we have to like do something to ramp up our efforts. We have to send out more messaging. We have to send out more campaigns. We have to have more virtual events. So they started pushing out messaging and outreach, social, email, however they could. But in most cases, what I saw was a lot of old messaging. So it was the stuff that they were doing maybe in the earlier in the year or even in 2019. They didn't shift to where their buyers were now. So they're not building the business case based on where their customers are now, because obviously everyone's priorities have shifted, goals have shifted, budgets have shifted. And I'm stealing this from Matt Hines. He calls a CFO is now the CFNO. So unless you can show them, unless you can show a CFO how you can contribute to their pipeline like immediately, it's going to be much harder, because a CFO might not have been involved in the buying decision or on the buying committee prior, but now I'm sure they're watching every penny that goes out. So you have that shorter window to show them time to value, greater need to showcase that you're an essential service now, even if you're going to share your long-term and multi-quarter, multi-year value prop, but you need to go straight to value now, as well as then that dynamic view for the future and how they can evolve with you. But value immediately, as opposed to product, service, solution, why we're so great, is what's going to work.
And it's interesting, as you're talking about them, thinking a conversation I had just yesterday with somebody who runs a mostly commercial insurance brokerage. And we were talking about just sales in general. And we both agreed, and he said it, which is, you never want to lead with price, right? You never want to talk about price. Yet, a lot of times, you got to start with price, even though you don't want to, because you've got to get somebody to look at a different option, right? Which is, maybe I can save you money, maybe I can do this. You got to talk about money pretty early on a first date, especially like what you're talking about with these CF no's. Like, you've got to be like, hey, I got your attention for 10 seconds. Let's talk about money. Okay, now that we did, let's not talk about money for a while, and then let's talk about value. But like, now we're talking. And I think that's valuable, because if you go to the extreme of never talking about money until later on, you might not even get that far, right? But sometimes sellers, they make the mistake of talking all about money up front and how much they're going to save and what the cost is, and then they become a commodity.
Yeah. It's a slippery slope. You don't want to make an RFP discussion right away, because then you just start getting, okay, where are my features and benefits over here? Where can I get the most for the least amount of money and the least pain of switching? So it's not fun, because it'll just get squeezed and squeezed.
Yeah. And then, like you said, slippery slope, it's going to be a tough game that most people aren't skilled enough to recover from, or just don't even have the deck stacked in their hands anymore. And they've just lost all control. So let me ask you this. Let's say SDR and BDR. So sales development, business development reps. This is generally in sales, or it's the team that's doing the outreach, setting up appointments, setting up demos, maybe starting some kind of engagement on a personal individual level, not just a like marketing machine level. Do you think they should be under sales or under marketing?
You mean who they should
report to?
Report to SDRs and BDRs?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good question. I'm in the camp that sales and marketing should be one department, but that's a whole other conversation. Okay. Because I feel like marketing has one kind of set of values about their solution and offering, and then sales has another value, and it's not always the same. So because the salespeople are always dealing with customers and prospects, they're in the trenches. They know what's going on, what their audience is challenged with, what they're experiencing. Marketing is kind of far removed sometimes when they're separated like that, and then they get stuck in that features and benefits conversation and why we're so great and all the awards. I'll see a conversation on a website, but if I look at the company website, and then when I speak to an actual SDR or BDR, they're talking about totally a different set of values. So it's kind of confusing for the buyer, like, which one do I look at, or how can I trust this person if it's not the same across the board? There's not like a unified message.
And anybody who knows me knows that I agree completely with that alignment, because for me, it's one conversation, which is why I referred to Michelle previously as a sales experience, but even in leadership and organizations, all of it, right? It starts with the marketing, branding, or performance-based. It's telling a story and sending a message. Sales should be picking that up and running with it so it's congruent. And then once they become a customer, it should be congruent. It should literally be the same thing. It shouldn't drop off. Like, marketing says this, sales is saying the sky is green, and then customer service and satisfaction is saying this. And it's like, the client's just confused, and then they're going to be upset. Yeah. And I like your idea. I mean, like, should fall under the same thing. That's why I love this new trend of the CRO, the chief revenue officer, and the director of revenue ops, where it's like, it's one parent who's running these two going the same direction. So I think that's great. Based on that, so we have kind of marketing, we have the business development-ish, and then we have the actual sales professional closer, kind of the person taking the ball the rest of the way. Where do you see sales, and I guess where they should be on social? Should they be on social? Should they be playing there or not?
Particularly in the B2B world, I think they have to be in social, but I think a lot of people go to the extreme where they're on every platform. And if you're selling a 6 or 7 figure deal, let's say, I doubt you're going to make your business decision by something that you saw on Facebook or on Instagram. I mean, I could be wrong, but what I've seen is that LinkedIn is the B2B platform of choice, but it's not like a selling platform. You can't be there just to sell and make it super obvious. If your profile looks like you're trying to close your next deal, or you're trying to land your next sales gig and is talking about yourself and your accomplishments and your quotas, then you're going to turn people off, because I'm going to automatically see that and say, okay, I am just a number to someone to get to their quarterly goal. I am not someone that they actually want to engage with or teach or give value from. So I've seen it all too many times where I will accept somebody's invite to connect, And then they will try to book me on a demo or send me their calendar link in the next 10 seconds. And I'm like, wait a second, just because I connected with you doesn't mean we have anything in common. You didn't show me a reason to even squeeze in 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour of my day with you. And you don't even know if I'm a valid customer and do I fit your customer profile? So like, I'm assuming that most buyers are doing that too, because I'm looking at somebody's profile. It's not giving me an emotional story. It's not making that human connection, because we have people that are doing this thing where they talk about themselves in the third person, which I'm still trying to figure out why. And it's just not showing how you're any different than all the other sales reps or business development reps. If I see that you're trying to pitch me right away in your profile, even, or even the content that you're sharing or the messaging that you're sharing, it's going to turn me off. So I'm assuming other buyers are feeling the same way. And one of the things that I think is missing from a lot of people's presence on social is they're not teaching for a differentiation in a way that leads maybe back to you as a service provider or a solution or a vendor, and you're not sharing your unique value. So then you start sounding like everyone else, and it's hard to compete with everyone else. You have to stand out and show your unique value, what makes you as a person unique, but also what makes your solution unique and your offerings unique and why they should work with you as opposed to 5 to 10 other competitors.
And I think the biggest challenge I've been able to dissect from that last part you were talking about is that a lot of salespeople and a lot of organizations think that their total addressable market is everyone, and they should be, and to use like the B2B terms, like the TAM, they think their total addressable market is everybody, and or they think the goal is for them to dominate the world and be a giant company that everyone is a customer of. And it's funny because I was talking to someone about this, I think it was actually today, where he said, you look at Apple, wildly popular, I think the biggest company financially, right, in the world, and it doesn't account for the largest percentage of everything. If you go to any business in most people's homes, they don't have Apple computers, right? They've done really well in the phone space, but even that's not 100%. But you see these sellers trying to think that everybody is in their tribe, when in fact, I think the key is that you've got to figure out who your tribe is, who you can help, who you really serve, and then focus on that group and talk to that group where it's clear. And then, like you're saying, that is what differentiates you.
Yeah, you have to own your space. And that's what Apple does. They own their space and they stick to what they're really good at and what that is and what that experience that they're trying to offer to people that are true Apple aficionados or people that are will wait in line overnight for the next product. They know who their target market is and they've identified them and they're speaking to them on every level. And that's what you need to do as a seller. Anyone and everyone is your ideal customer. But I think that's also on to identify your ideal customer is something that marketing should be doing for sales. One of the things that I didn't mention is I think that marketing and sales should be together because marketing should be accountable for revenue too. It can't be all on sales. You can't just say, oh, we're delivering all this great content about our products and solution and, you know, have fun with it, sales. It's up to you to take the baton the rest of the way and actually drive in revenue. So it's not just sales' job to come up with that, because that's what leads to confusion. And then if you, you know, if every SDR has to come up with their own value, it's never going to be the same. It's never going to be unified.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's so important for everyone to be tied to revenue and the direction of the company and the success of customers. Like new clients come on board, are they successful? Like that all starts again with marketing and sales being together. A lot of people will or historically have put marketing in the art side. It's like we do marketing, it's an art.
It's, yeah, really it's creative science. Only. Yeah.
It's creative and we're just going to do this and then you guys run with it. Somebody else go with it. Obviously, there's a lot of science. It's just usually not tracked as far as like the metrics and the key numbers. And then I just can't let it go. But something you said about like the LinkedIn instant sales pitch and get on the calendar. I bring this up all the time. So people listening to it, they probably know where I'm going, which is nobody likes it and to stop. But I think what's interesting as you're talking, I talk a lot about like courtship and dating and sales and how when it's done right, it's going in that same way. Literally what you described, it instantly hit me. And the analogy is like you meet someone, they say, hi, my name is so-and-so. That's great. And then they say, hey, would you like to go out to dinner tonight? Right? Like, I don't even know you. You could be a serial killer. This could be amazing. Seriously. There's no basis for why it would make sense to make the next step in any realm. And I'll tell you two things. One is most people would never do that. Oh. Nobody would accept that offer to go on that date instant. And the people who do that know that it could work some percentage of the time. And so it's a numbers game. It's just spray and pray and just hit the whole world. And somebody's going to bite, say yes. Yeah, someone's going to bite and it's going to work. So anyway, I had to throw that in there in that analogy because I was like, it is terrible, but that's what it's like. So you mentioned earlier, and this is interesting, about the C-suite not spending time with the vendors, like with anybody trying to sell to a C-suite, to anybody in leadership, a founder, an owner. How do you get that seat in that conversation? Like, how do you maximize that time? I mean, what is your suggestion if you've got 2% of their week or some part of that?
Yeah, I mean, you have to know them pretty quick. They're not interested in friends. They're not interested in having more followers. What they're interested is learning from someone that's going to give them value to their organization. So they're not really interested in your product or benefits that the product might bring, the solution might bring. They operate on a strategic level. So you have to address them on a strategic value. They need stats. They need facts. They need a logical argument for change, because change, obviously, we know is really painful. And you can complement that with your how-to guides and your other brand awareness content for marketing, but you need to establish a reason for them to get involved with the discussion with you. And I think that's what's missing on social, in profiles and email conversations, any kind of touch point that people are having when it comes to sales or marketing with the C-suite. The most important aspect of that is like delivering an aha moment. So if you get someone to pause and think or maybe lean in, I think that's a really what's going to differentiate you from other people that you might be up against. And what I've seen, because we work with typically with SaaS and tech firms and supply chain, they're basing their content and their messaging and conversations on what prospects and customers are telling them through voice of the customer research and sales discovery. But that's also the same info that your competitors are using. So that's how you fell back into that commodity messaging, I think, that we talked about a bit before. So you're simply reacting to what you think that they have a problem or whatever issue they're having, and then connecting it to predefined needs and wants and specific capabilities that maybe you can fill in the blanks type of thing. So that's where you go to that commodity messaging and then go back to that price-based conversation, which is going to squeeze your margins, and your competitors are doing similar things. So if you're not sharing something unique, you're just, again, sounding like everyone else.
Yeah. And then you're back into that not being different, not standing out. And then ultimately for that person who's trying to make these decisions, if there's no differentiation among competitors, either you're going to go into RFP mode, you're going to go into commodity mode, or they're just going to make no decision, right? Like, I spent most of my time dealing with business to consumer. People are still human, even at companies. We're all human, right? No matter what your title is or no matter what you're potentially buying, a confused mind never buys, right? Like, if they're confused and they can't clearly see that you're different or better somehow, and everyone is the same, then if everyone's the same, why make any decision? Because there's obviously no value if everyone's the same, in my opinion. And so then you get nothing. Then
you get ignored.
Yeah, for sure. Let's shift a little bit. What do you think when you hear the word authentic, or what does that mean for you?
Being real, showing who you are, and not trying to hide behind your company or your logo or even your title. Being an actual individual. And it shows, like, when I see a person, especially a salesperson, that's talking all about their company, maybe have copied and pasted the messaging from a website into their profile, that's not authentic to me. So authentic is putting a stake in the ground and showing who you are and what you believe in and what you stand for. And that's going to be authentic. That's authenticity to me.
Let me ask you, I rarely bring this up, but where do you see that balance, though, of where somebody is authentic as a seller at a company in this framework that we're talking about, like when selling, let's say on social, and they're copying and pasting, maybe not doing that, bringing in their authentic voice. Is there a balance, you think, like off the top of your head, that's good?
There is a balance, but I think we all know that people connect with other people. They don't connect with logos. They don't connect with organizations, mm-hmm. and they buy from individuals. So you have to be the forefront of everything when it comes to authenticity and make the company and what you're offering secondary. At least that's what it would be to me. I know a lot of SDRs and BDRs and people that are in the sales space, they move around too. So your authenticity can't just be who you're working for now or who you've worked for the last 10 years. It's got to be who you are, not the company, not the organization.
Got it. I love it. And then where do you see persuasion fitting in, and or what do you think about when you hear the word persuasion?
Trying to get someone to think a little differently than they've thought before, but in a way that makes it seem that they came to the conclusion themselves. So you're sharing a story, you're sharing insights, you're sharing examples, you're sharing your personal experiences to get them to think differently and then kind of come to their realization themselves. Sometimes you have a negative aspect to it, but I think if you guide a person and have them come to the conclusion on their own, that's the more powerful aspect of the word persuasion and the whole concept.
And I love that you threw in that it could have a negative connotation, because sometimes I ask people and they put that in the same bucket as manipulation. They prefer to use another word. And when you look at the definition, which I spent some time researching, obviously, before writing my book, I looked at that and the definition is vague. It doesn't say to only help somebody in a positive way.
Yeah.
It kind of leaves it open for intent. So I'm so glad that you brought that up. In your experience, obviously everything in life is sales. So you're selling, even if you're just helping people with marketing, but you're seeing a lot of companies where they're doing marketing, they're doing sales. Obviously, if you're on LinkedIn, you're seeing what people are doing. What to you, for yourself internally or externally, you would say is the most important trait, personality, mindset that contributes to someone being successful in sales?
You know what? Being positive and being able to have a thick skin and grit. That's one of my favorite words, because you have to, selling is hard. It's not easy. And if anyone tells you that it's easy, then they're lying to you. I think if you just know a positive mindset is going to help you and just know that it's a roller coaster ride and you have to be up for the challenge, but that's what makes it exciting.
It's interesting because early on in my podcast, I think it was season two, I had Katie Ivey on the show and I asked her a similar question and she said, grit. And it was the first time I'd ever heard somebody, especially in a leadership role, say that word in terms of like what they would think is the most important one. Some people might say persistence, but grit just has this different connotation to it that I love, which is just like, it's more than just persistence. It's also, you know, you get knocked down, you get up. It's just, sometimes it's messy, but you're just moving forward, right? And going after something. So I love it. Every time I hear that, I just think, okay, that's it, especially for sales. And I think what's interesting too, is you said that if anyone tells you it's easy, they're lying to you. And I'm literally just thinking of like different industries, and I won't point them out, where it's like, not get rich quick, but it's like, you can make so much money and this is so easy and start with selling to all your friends and family.
Oh,
and
that's that multi-level marketing. Yeah, I love those.
I didn't say it, but you can. I mean, any industry, any of those industries where that's the premise and the story that's being told and the hook that's being dragged. Nothing good ever comes easy or quick, right?
That's
if you want something
run.
Truly good. Yeah, that's when you...
It might be easy to sell like a soda, like one, but to sell millions of units, that's right. A whole different conversation. But yeah, it's not easy.
Yeah, definitely not. The businesses that you're working with, the ones that you're dealing with, what do you see them doing well right now? Normally, I would ask this question in an evergreen way, like businesses in general, but obviously we've got this little weird thing going on in 2020. So we could be just semi-specific if we want. Election, holidays, something.
Yeah,
I don't know. Some weird
like
stuff
that.
Going on. What do you see them doing well in terms of marketing? Because that's the focus you have, marketing and sales. What are they doing well? Which ones are not doing things well and why?
So the organizations that are doing things well are the ones that are thinking about the customer first and not their quota or their numbers they have to hit. And obviously they have to think about those, but don't lead with it and don't make it obvious that that's what your end game is all the time, because nobody wants to be a number. Nobody wants to be just thought of as a quota contributor. They're a person. They're having a lot of issues, whether it's internal, external, personal. So connect with them on a human to human level. And those are the brands, the companies, the individuals, the leaders that I see are getting back to your question about authentic. That's what goes back, comes through when you're acting like that, is that you're being a true person who's going to teach, who's going to add value. And the people that are getting it wrong, I mean, we've already kind of beaten them over the head already what they're doing wrong. I don't have to tell them what they're doing wrong. They're just trying to book a demo or a conversation too quickly and just leading to the punchline too quickly. And please stop doing it.
Side tangent here, because one thing, obviously, we're talking about both ends of the spectrum. And anyone that listens to me knows like there's both ends, right? There's the isn't working well or doesn't work well, long-term relationship building for scalable. And then there's what does. But let me know your thoughts. What advice would you give to somebody who's listening to this or watching this and going, you're right. That's not working. I'm going all sales pitch, all monologue right from the beginning, either in my post or in my conversations, even on the phone. I know where I could go. I know where it could work better, but that's so far away. Like my start and my stop are just too far apart. Where should they begin? Like what's the first thing you would have somebody do to start taking one step at a time towards a different game?
Oh, I like this question. This one's good. I like to boil it down to, is every interaction that you have with a prospect, a customer, a potential client, whoever you're interacting with, is a mini sales conversation. So one miscommunication, one misfire can leave you either you get ghosted or they fall off the face of the earth and they stop returning your calls. They stop responding to your emails, your messages, your LinkedIn outreach, whatever it is that you're trying to interact with them. Is every little touch point is a mini sales conversation and it has to have value. Otherwise, what's the point? Like, don't send a message just to check in to see how you are. Give me some value in that conversation, whether it's an article that you think I'd be interested in, or, you know, you had an experience the other day with a customer that you thought this person might relate to or something like that. If you're giving me value at every touch point, I will keep you engaged or keeping myself, I will stay engaged with you and you won't go into the ignore bucket. So I think that's the best thing, is to think of every interaction. What is the intention of that? Are you just sending an email or making a phone call or sending a message just to do it and say that you did 100? Or are you doing it because you actually want to give them some value in the interaction?
And in a stop in between those two, which is, are you doing it? Are you sending the message? Are you making that phone call with the intent of convincing them to move forward without them seeing the value in return? And again, I always, especially with, we're talking about long sales cycle relationship building, I always go back to courtship. And if you're just like sending somebody a message and be like, hey, what's going on? Like, you're hoping they're going to say, oh yeah, that's right, I wanted to go out with you. And yes, I would like to, like, on the spot, right? And I think that's what salespeople do. They just think, if I just stay aware in their awareness enough and I send messages and I just kind of nag politely, then this will work. I'll say it generally doesn't in life either. So just think about that. Like, a lot of people have trouble separating the two, or they don't have trouble and they think sales is completely different and they want to sell differently than they want to what works in relationships and in life. And if you just do what you would do, or you like doing, or when people interact with you personally, do that same thing with a different end goal in mind, then it works so much better. What did you want to be when you grew up?
It depends.
I'm going to guess it wasn't account-based management, account-based marketing goddess. I'm just going to guess.
No, it depends what age you're talking about. When I was younger, actually, I wanted to be an attorney because I love to argue in a way to get people to think my way. So I'd love to persuade. So it was just funny. Everyone always assumed, oh my God, you'd be so good at this. It never went that way. But that's what I wanted to be, was an attorney.
Okay. And then you said different ages. So was that early or later? And did something else? Was there some other?
That was like middle school, kind of high school thing. But when I was really little, I didn't know any better. And I thought I wanted to be like a professional cheerleader. I don't know what I was thinking.
That's awesome. I love it. What happened with the legal career? Why didn't
with
that
the legal
go
career? You know, it sounded good on paper. It just wasn't something that I could see myself. Like, it sounded good if I could be in court, but all the
work.
The research and being stuck in law journals all day, that aspect of it was not something that I wanted to do. So I didn't like that aspect. I wanted to kind of cut to the fun stuff. And I think I might have romanticized it a little too much.
TVs, movies, books, stories, all that stuff.
Yeah. And always winning arguments at home is not the same as winning them in real life.
And winning arguments at home without having spent hours and hours of research and having all the real justifications, just actually doing it because you can just badger family
enough and just give up.
Not quite the same. And it's funny because I ask this question. I always like to know, because obviously anybody who knows me, my path was very windy to get to here. And I always love just hearing what people wanted to do or thought they wanted to do, and then where life kind of went. A lot of times people see somebody and they think, oh, they've always wanted to do that, right? Mm-hmm. Always want to do marketing, always want to do sales. And some people, that's true. Most people, it's probably not true. What would you say is the most non-sales, but also non-marketing job, since you live in both of those realms? What's like one of the most non-sales
that I've ever had? Jobs?
Yeah.
Well, I guess you can see there's an aspect of sales in this, but I used to work when I was in college in Walt Disney World. I did this thing they have called the college program. I don't even know if they have it anymore. But I guess it was sales because I did work in the retail part of it. But it, to me, it was always about creating cool experiences and interacting with the guests more than actually ringing up merchandise or whatever it was. So there was sales to it, but I didn't think of it that way at the time.
Interesting. And I could totally see how it is. It's all about sales, and it's sales through an experience, which usually can always lead to much easier sales and persuasion when there's this emotional experience that goes with it. What is your definition of success?
Probably being happy in what you do and being excited to do what you do every day. Whatever you chose as your vocation, your job, your business, the way that you make a living for yourself, if you're happy doing it and you're excited and it keeps you engaged all the time, that's my definition of success. Because at the end of the day, if you're not happy with what you spend the majority of your life doing or a big chunk of your life doing, then that's not fun and that can't be successful for you long term.
I got it. I love it. And then last question, the journey or the destination?
Oh, definitely the journey. Sometimes you think it's about the destination, but I think the journey is what's the longer part of it. And then when you get to the final destination, sometimes it's not always what you thought. So definitely the journey, the excitement to get to it.
Awesome. I can totally relate. And it's interesting having everyone kind of put their answers in different terms. Christina, thanks for joining me on the show. Now, for people to find you, obviously there's LinkedIn and they can find you on there. Just obviously warning to everybody, if you send her a message, please start off the relationship and engage and do it the proper way. Especially if you heard it here on the show, like, please, hey, I heard you on Jason's show here. Well, why don't we get on my calendar? No, please don't do that. And then for your company, so it's personalabm.com.
Yes.
So we got that. And then also you have your podcast, your show, which is stopthesalesdrop.com is the site for that. And then you're also doing these things called Friday Reboot. So it's stopthesalesdrop.com/Friday Reboot. What is that?
So Stop the Sales Drop is something that actually started this year due to the 2020 crazy. It's our education and events arm. So we had a week-long event. We have a podcast. We have articles. We have videos. And we're doing live panels. These are all free to attend live. We're doing LinkedIn Live sessions. So it's all about rebooting your sales, marketing, revenue enablement, sales enablement in those kind of categories. So it's about educating because I feel like a lot of people were kind of trying to figure things out and they wanted something. There's always going to be some kind of thing that stops sales, whether it's internal factors, external factors, personal factors. So I think people just wanted something, or at least what we were experiencing, something to kind of overcome that. And that's why we started that education arm, Stop the Sales Drop.
I love it. And then I kind of mentioned it, but I want to ask you real quick. So the personalabm.com and what you do there, who's a good person that if they're listening to this, they're like, I should reach out to you. Who's that person that you can really help?
Like I said earlier, we position ourselves as marketing for sales teams. So people that are in sales that are having a hard time winning, protecting, or expanding keyed accounts, named accounts. So like they say, they come to us and they say, I want to close IBM or I want to work with XYZ company, but it has to be like an actual named account. And typically what we do best with is B2B, tech, SaaS, supply chain, logistics, and then the tech within those industries is who we work with. But reach out to me on LinkedIn and if you're interested, and we'll go from there and figure out if we're a good fit.
That's awesome. Christina, thanks for being on the show. Thanks for sharing. I learned a lot because, again, this is a realm I'm not used to with a named account strategy. So I appreciate it. I had fun. And thanks for sharing with everybody.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
And for everyone listening, make sure to reach out to her. She's amazing. If you're in sales, like the Friday Reboots, the Stop the Sales Drop, not just saying it because she had me on her podcast, but it's truly amazing stuff. There's lots of great content out there from lots of great leaders in there. So make sure to check her out. And that's it for this episode. And we'll catch you on the next Conversations About Authentic Persuasion. Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.